Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. You know, historical perspective here, it was 1948 when the Women's Armed Services Integration Act was signed. That allowed women to serve as regular members of the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps. Up until that point, they had served in wars, Revolutionary War, the earliest note, nurses, support positions like that. Since the end of 1973, the end of the draft there, they moved to an all-volunteer forces. You have seen the women in our military service, the numbers there rise. Now there are about 2 million women veterans living in the U.S. today. We talk about veterans issues an awful lot, transition, some of the mental health that's necessary there as well, or could be necessary. Do we talk about the differences between men and women in those programs? Not often enough. We will today. Alice Knight joins us for Operation Juliet on Voices of Montana. I'm going to admit, as we talk an awful lot about veteran services, and I know that women and men, they're going to receive things differently. They're going to serve maybe a little bit differently, but certainly we are overly focused perhaps on one aspect. And as I note some numbers about how the numbers of women veterans have grown as well, what are the questions arise, you know? And Dallas Knight is sitting with us. She's the founder and president of Operation Juliet. And good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in.
Good morning. Yes. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I have to admit that it didn't dawn on me enough that there may be special needs or different kinds of women are going to respond differently, I think, to different programs when it comes to maybe it's transitioning. That's the big part of it as well. But how PTSD, how you go through all of that. And you've got a story as well as a combat veteran. Thank you for serving Operation Iraqi Freedom. As I noted or you said this morning, it was just a couple of months before 9/11 when you signed on to service there. And the world changed pretty dramatically after that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was just 17 when I graduated high school, and my mom actually had to sign over her parental rights to the government.
Oh, wow. She did that.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Good
yeah.
for you.
Talked her into it. But, you know, I don't think she had much fear because there wasn't much going on in the world in July of 2001.
Yeah. And then what? What was let me ask this first.
Yeah.
At age 17,
yeah.
why did you choose the military?
You know, I screwed around a lot as a kid, and I didn't realize the importance of your grades or your family stature in the projection of your adult life. And by the time I kind of figured it out, my senior year, it was a little too late. My grade point average wasn't very high. And, you know, I was just looking for a break. I come from a multi-generational combat veteran family. My grandfather actually served in 3 wars and made it out alive. My uncle was a Vietnam veteran, and I had several older cousins that were serving currently during that time in the military. And so being in the military wasn't a foreign thing, but I was the first woman in my family to sign up and serve. And, you know, I had to do a little bit of the rebellion thing and go into the Army since the majority of my family was in the Air Force.
And so great conversation, I'm sure, between you and your mom at that point as well. Maybe go into that and then talk about your service, because all of that leads into where you are today. You're expanding into the Bozeman area, which is really cool. That's something we're going to talk about here today.
Yeah.
But I'm really fascinated too about the things that you guys do and the differences that you have noted, how we treat our veterans, by sexes, so to speak.
Yeah. So honestly, I joined, 9/11 happened. I knew in my gut that I was going to end up seeing war. My mom thought I was crazy because, you know, women don't serve in war. At least that is the public perception of our military, even in 2003. I went to training in 2002, and we were on a plane headed overseas by January of 2003. And so I was in Iraq for the better course of 2003. And when I came home, some of my fellow military were seeking help and getting treated and diagnosed with PTSD. and they were also having their security clearances taken from them. And that scared the crap out of me because one of my primary motivations of joining the military is I wanted to be a DEA agent. And two of the requirements for that were a bachelor's degree and real world experience. Now, I didn't realize how real world of experience I was going to get. And with the bachelor's degree, you know, that was my way of being able to pay for school since I didn't do so great in high school and whatnot. So I was still wanting to pursue that career. And I knew that I couldn't sacrifice my security clearance. So I just stuffed everything down and I decided I was just going to forget it all happened and locked it in a black box in the back of my head. And that worked for about 15 years.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When did you notice that that it wasn't working, that you wanted to reach out? And then, you know, from there, tailoring those services that you knew that women need more, or I don't know how to put it actually, you know, I mean, but there's differences and we have to acknowledge that. So tell us what those differences are.
Well, I think when it kind of just hit me like a ton of bricks, it snuck up on me. And I think that is the case for a lot of people who try to ignore it. You know, it's like shaking one of those bottles that is full of, and I'm not a science person, but you know, like carbonated water and baking soda, and eventually it's just going to erupt and go all over the place, right? And that's kind of what happened with me in 2021. And I found myself in a toxic relationship, and I was depressed, I was suicidal, my anxiety was through the roof, and I knew something needed to change. And the first thing that one of my friends and my cousin helped me through was just changing my nutrition. And so at that point, I realized how significant our diet and nutrition has on our mental health. You know, a lot of people don't tie those two things together, but they very much are. And with that, I got a little bit of a glimpse of light and a little bit of a breath. And I realized I needed to get out of that relationship, and I did. And about 6 months of isolation, I finally got myself out there and started networking with, you know, more strong and empowering and inspiring women. And through that networking, I met my therapist. And I said, you know what, I'm going to give this a go. It's a little unorthodox. It's not talk therapy. It's called Resonance Repatterning with Heather McAbee. And, you know, at that point, I just said, you know, I don't really have anything to lose, so why not give it a shot? And the way it operates is essentially digging into the foundation of your traumas and addressing the patterns that fall because of those. And that was really helpful. And we started peeling back these layers. What I thought was the blunt force of the trauma was, you know, my failed marriage. And then, you know, we dived into some childhood stuff. But then my military career kind of hit me straight on in the face. And I decided the way I wanted to approach it, the way I wanted to heal from it, was essentially to relive it and give myself the chance to feel all the feelings that I had suppressed for so long. And with that, I had kept a journal during my deployment, and I decided to read it from beginning to end for the first time in nearly 20 years. I had never picked it up and read it. And with that, it took me 6 months to get through 89 journal entries, and I quit once for about 2 weeks, and therapy helped me back through it. But when I got through it, I also, thanks to a Vietnam veteran mentor that I had years prior, decided to also publish that journal. And so I published my book called Shattered Reflections in September of 2023. And the release that I had with that, feeling heard, feeling validated, feeling seen, not only by the community, but my fellow veterans, and even acknowledged by this, you know, Vietnam veteran mentor of mine, was such a breath of fresh air. That at that time, almost immediately, I wanted to give other women that opportunity. And so I launched my podcast called the Not So Average Jane Podcast. And I would feature other female combat veterans on the podcast. And it was a very organic conversation. And we, you know, went through their journey based on what they wanted to share. And my goal was to have essentially a digital encyclopedia of women sharing their stories in combat, so that we, you know, had some type of historical print, because the public perception is that women don't serve in combat and they don't fire weapons and they're not shot at and they're not blown up and these things don't happen to women, but they absolutely do. And we're about 4 episodes in, and my intelligence analyst brain started kicking in, and I started seeing all these different patterns that were across the board and also patterns that I resonated with. And so with that, I was hearing, you know, I don't feel heard, I don't feel seen, I feel invalid. And then two really prominent things stood out to me, and that was the loss of sense and embracing their femininity. So most of these women were sharing, you know, I don't really know what it's like to be a woman or embrace being a woman anymore. And that made sense, right? The military trains us all the same. Mm-hmm. We stand beside our brothers and we train the same, and we're taught that, you know, feelings and emotions are weakness and you have to stuff those down, which makes sense. It saved me more times than I can count when I was deployed. We have to be able to take the emotion out of it, and we have to be very logical, strategic, and tactical. And so that saves us in the moment. But what the military does not do is a good job at training us to re-enter civilian life. And so as a woman, at our core, we are nurturers, we are fixers, we are menders, we have that loving heart, right? That's our role in the balance of a man and a woman. And a lot of us have a hard time finding our way back to that. So that was number one. Number two is, surprisingly, most of the women, about 80% who I've spoke to, have experienced some form of military sexual trauma. And so with those two things in mind, I went looking for resources, because honestly, I felt some guilt that these women were coming and sharing their stories with me and being vulnerable and opening up. And the last thing I wanted to do was open this box and say, hey, thanks for sharing your story. Your episode will be out next week. And then something bad happens,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to be able to collect resources and send them to those resources. But unfortunately, I was very, very sad at what I found, in that there were little to no resources specific for female veterans. I could not find any resources that were specific for female combat veterans that addressed those two issues. And with those issues came the fact that every organization that I did find that had some type of female program was ran and operated by men, and the faculty were men. So you take, I've lost my sense of femininity or how to embrace it, and maybe I have some military sexual trauma, and then you ask those women to go and be their most vulnerable selves with a man in the room, and it's just not going to happen. And it's no fault to the guys. It's no fault right. to the organizations. It's just the situation at hand. And so no one was really looking at this. And so at that time, I just said, you know, screw it. I'll do it myself.
Yeah. And you know, and I like that. You don't have to figure it all out. You just kind of start walking it out and then put mm-hmm. things together. And then you get to this Operation Juliet. And then the expansion here as well, which is pretty cool. Operation Juliet, created in response to a gap for women or veteran and military service women coming out of the service as well. And one key word, and Dallas Knight is with us here, founder and president of Operation Juliet. It began not that long ago, and now they're expanding into the Bozeman area. We're going to talk more about that. And with that, we're going to introduce a colleague and someone who's going to be helping in that Bozeman area, Dallas Knight, again, in studio. It's Aaron Alexander joining us by phone, served in the Navy. Aaron, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good. Thank you for coming on today. Appreciate that. Dallas, maybe talk about Aaron a little bit, and then Aaron, I'll have you tell your story about how this is an organization that you have gravitated to for a number of reasons as well. But Dallas, go ahead.
Yeah, it's wild. I moved to Montana in 2015, and Operation Juliet came to fruition in the fall of 2024. So a little over 9 years I had been here in Montana, and I had never met another female veteran, at least that I knew of.
Really?
And wow. Once I started talking about it and sharing my story, and obviously Operation Juliet coming to be, they just started kind of popping up out of the woodworks and gravitating towards me. And it has been so incredible to find so many women. Because in case you didn't know, Montana has the highest population of veterans in the entire United States. So we can only obviously relate that to the women as well. There's an estimated 9,000 female veterans in the state of Montana. So I can only imagine if, you know, I could find all 9,000 of them, I'm at about 150 to 200 right now, just in the Billings area and a little bit outside of that. But now we're starting to grow into Bozeman, and Aaron has been detrimental in that expansion.
Aaron, instrumental is what
instrumental,
you mean.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, did I say detrimental?
Yeah, you did.
That's not right.
Yeah, I think Aaron probably shrugged her shoulders. Hey, I'm trying to help.
Thank you for correcting me.
Yeah. Hey, Aaron, go ahead and launch into your story. Why are you interested? What do you find in value here for Operation Juliet to the point where you were kind of like going all in?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I really have struggled since I got out of the military. I've been out for 8 years now. And when I was in the military, I had such an amazing community. I was surrounded by the people I was with 24/7 on deployment. And they really became like my family. Mm-hmm. And when I got out, I really struggled to make those connections and build that community. I searched for programs that were out there to be of help, but I would go on a retreat for a week and I'd come home, and I'd come home on a high, and then everything would just kind of go away. And a few months ago, I had the opportunity to meet Dallas through a mutual acquaintance. And we met and we talked, and I told her everything that she's doing is everything I want to be doing, because that community aspect of having a group of veterans that you can relate to is so important.
Well, and that's one of the things that you focus on, both of you guys do. But Dallas, you know, in everything I've read about it, there is the mention of community here mm-hmm. as well. And so when we talk about that transition back in to society, it's really transitioning back into community.
Yeah.
That is probably one of the most overlooked, and it has been, but now there's a lot more attention to it, but vital aspects of a successful post-military life.
Absolutely. Community is 100% support, supports everything in your mental capability. And it also, you know, allows you to understand that all the things that you're feeling and experiencing on the negative side, like, you're not the only one. And a lot of times you can feel very alone in those situations, but even knowing, okay, you know what, this woman's to my left or this woman to my right has also struggled in that capacity, and she made it through. And, you know, I always try to share every aspect of my story and experience, even the dark and not so easy things to talk about, mm-hmm. because I want these ladies to know, like, I may be a few steps ahead of you, but I've laid that path down, and you can do it too. There's nothing that you can't rise above and get through if you just put in a little bit of work and you lock arms with people who will love and support you.
Aaron, what do you think, from your perspective, as you see it, that women veterans need most? I mean, Dallas has shared some of that, you know, kind of retouching femininity, and also, you know, talking about, and that's a tough one. We're going to get into it. You know, perhaps there's sexual trauma suffered in that experience as well, which, again, that's reprehensible. But, you know, share your experience. Share your discovery of a need for wellness, and overall wellness post your military service.
Yeah, absolutely. So 2.5 years ago, I actually had a suicide attempt and ended up in the hospital at the VA, where I was the only female in the unit. And I was told I was isolating because I refused to go sit in the group room that was full of men. And, you know, like, that really struck with me, realizing that there isn't really anything out there that's specifically for women veterans. And a lot of times it is really hard to be in a room full of men, and having the ability to heal the way that we need to heal.
Right. That's a point. That's a tough point, Aaron, to get to. And but you're beyond that now, and I appreciate that. What got you beyond that?
You know, a lot of it was some self-determination, realizing that I didn't want to be in that place, and I needed to do something to change it. I spent a lot of nights doing a lot of late night research, trying to find resources out there. I had the opportunity to attend a program last year in the beginning part of the year, right after I moved to Montana, that really took me from just kind of surviving, living day to day to actually thriving. And that really lit a fire in me to want to help other female veterans and other veterans in general find their path to healing, because it's not a one-size-fits-all thing.
Yeah. Dallas, comment.
Yeah, I think, you know, her saying that one-size-fits-all, that's kind of the foundation of what we do here at Operation Juliet. Yes, it's about community, but through our programs, our primary goal is to introduce the women into a variety of healing modalities so that they have as many tools in their toolbox as possible, because any one healing modality is not going to fit for every experience. The example I like to use is the VA actually taught me how to play the piano to help me with my anxiety, and it absolutely does help. But where I have the majority of my panic attacks is inside Costco, as a lot of us do when, you know, it's Friday before a holiday and everyone's trying to get those things, right? But I can't whip my piano out while I'm in an aisle at Costco, although that might be funny and that might go viral and it might, you know, raise some more awareness about Operation Juliet.
We'll help you set that up next time.
Yeah, okay. We'll put a piano in Costco.
Yeah.
But my point is yes, playing the piano helps with my anxiety, but that's not going to be appropriate in every situation. So I have to dig into my toolbox and find other healing modalities, other methods to help me through that situation. And so through our programs, we expose the women to as many different aspects as possible. And that way, if they find one that works for them, that's amazing. They can add that to their toolbox. And if they are exposed to something that doesn't work and they're not really keen on it, that's okay too. Maybe they'll be able to refer another veteran or another friend to that healing modality, but at least they're aware of it.
God, we have some issues we want to talk about here too, but we'll also want to brag about this expansion and how, you know, quickly the organization has risen. So, but I'm going to run out of time here in about a minute and a half. Aaron, maybe just respond with you know, where you're at right now, and what in your ability to help other women, what would you say to them to bring them in, to have them make a call or click on to OperationJuliet.org?
You know, I've actually only been involved with Operation Juliet for a short time. Mm-hmm. I actually live in the Bozeman area. And so I've gone over to a couple of the Billings events, and I'm super excited for them to come to Bozeman. I think it's going to be a great opportunity to build a female veteran community here. Something I've noticed that we don't have a huge veteran community here. There's just not a whole lot of people getting out there and coming to events and stuff when they do have some in the area. And so I'm looking forward to being able to help change that.
Yeah, and programs like the Not So Average, well, that's Not So Average Jane podcast, but you have the Not So Average Jane Retreat, Dallas. What's that?
Yeah, that's our flagship program. It is exclusive for female combat veterans. The curriculum was designed exactly for them and keeping them in mind. But realizing that we need to serve the entire female veteran community. We have two other programs that also serve all of the women who have served on a regular basis.
Again, those women numbers in military service have been rising steadily here. They're projecting in just a few years here, maybe 16% to 18% of all living veterans will be women who have served in the military. Right now, that number at about 11% by 2023. And 6.3% of all U.S. veterans in 2000. So that number has risen dramatically. Welcome back here. We're talking with Dallas Knight, founder and president of Operation Juliet, OperationJuliet.org. This is an organization that's geared toward really that transition back into civil life for our female military veterans. They're going to have different issues, and they're going to respond differently to get that healing that they need. We're also joined by Erin Alexander, and she will be one of those colleagues who's helping Dallas expand into the Bozeman area. And I want to really get to that, too, here in just a little bit, because that's the exciting news, and you'll be up against the Bobcat Parade, I think, on Saturday.
Yeah, we're trying not to compete, but, you know.
we'll get to that. But I don't want to gloss over some of those things that are unique about women transitioning back in. You talk about, maintaining that femininity. And you know, why is that valuable? And where did that go, so to speak? And then the sexual trauma. That is not going to be a comfortable topic to talk about. And I can imagine that it's very uncomfortable in especially a military command setting. to report in that regard. So let's go into that right now. And I don't have a question, except I want you to address, you know, how vital that is. And it's got to be a key for mental health for women who have suffered that.
Yeah, it's very impactful in the most negative way possible in the military, and it's a lot more prominent than most understand. And we're talking, you know, on a spectrum, everything from harassment all the way to full-on assault. And most of it goes unreported and brushed to the side because our military just kind of sweeps it under the rug most of the time. And besides, you know, not having impactful consequences that actually fit the bill.
The offense. Yeah.
Right. A lot of the women, you know, you still have to like serve with those guys. Right. So from what I'm shared, like what I'm told is that a lot of times they are treated differently and they're outcasted and they are then more verbally harassed. And then, you know, if that escalates, most of the time the military's answer is to just move you. And or the person who's doing the harassing. And, you know, there was a story this past summer out of Texas, and it was a man who served in the Navy, and he had prior offenses and reports of sexual harassment. He even raped a prior girlfriend, and she had reported it. And they moved him. They just moved him to a different duty station, said, oh, we'll just get him out of here and separate you guys, and then everything will be fine. Well, he raped and killed a girl on a ship. And so my thing is like, yeah, you just smack someone on the hand and say no, and move them. That doesn't address the issue. That doesn't resolve the problem. And then it can escalate to what it did. And so a lot of that goes on. And these women are scared to say anything, because either A, nothing's going to happen anyway, so they'll just handle it, or the consequences of within their supposedly community ends up being worse. And I mean, worst case scenario, you're going to end up in a foxhole with this guy, right? And you have to be able to trust them to have your back and vice versa. And when that type of confliction starts to happen, that trust is broken. And so there's just all of this going on underneath the surface of everything. I've had a newly promoted colonel woman who was raped twice in her career, and she never reported it because she was scared that it would have jeopardized her advancement in her career.
It's hard to hear that, and I know people go through that, and we're not always at our best as well. But when we do hear that, it begs response. Mm-hmm. Has the military responded in, I'm going to guess not in a way that really moves that ball forward, not right now anyway, but talk about, you know, having a discussion about sexual trauma in the military and the military's response to, you know, the awareness of it and maybe moving in the right direction in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think they're aware of it. I think the way they handle it, they try and keep it in-house, right? It's like back in the day when you didn't talk about anything that went on inside your family, and then you went to church on Sunday and pretended like everything was just hunky-dory, right? So they just keep everything in-house because they don't want the general population to know that there are issues. But there are issues, and I've been out for a long time, so I don't know what exactly is being done. I'm just sharing and conveying stories that are shared with me. The colonel that I just spoke about, she went through our retreat in June. And I mean, this is recent. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend like everything is, you know, better. Mm-hmm. Since I got out, it clearly is not. But, you know, as we are kind of, I was sharing with you offline, this subject in itself is sensitive, but the understanding what the circumstances are when those things are happening is a whole nother level of trauma, having to keep it quiet for fear of your career being squashed, for fear of, you know, being rejected by your brothers and sisters in your unit and not having that trust and camaraderie if you were to actually, you know, go to the front lines in any way, shape, or form. So there's a lot of other underlying trauma. And then you get out and you have this suppressed trauma that you don't discuss and talk about, and you don't feel safe and vulnerable enough to bring it up. And you also feel alone because no one talks about these things, right? Mm-hmm. And then everyone just feels like they're alone in the situation. So as hard as it is for me to talk about it, and it's also very empowering for me to be able to create a safe space for these women to share and to not feel alone in these things.
Dallas Knight, again, founder and president of Operation Juliet. And Aaron Alexander, Navy a veteran and also a colleague, leading this or helping to lead this Bozeman expansion. Aaron, I don't want to get into an uncomfortable area for you, but maybe share your thoughts on that. And I'm going to ask, as a leader now for Operation Juliet, you're going to be tasked with understanding that process there as well. And so I'm pretty sure you're getting some training about it. I'd be darn nervous about it, but I would want to be prepared. Talk about that aspect, Aaron, of the healing that you want to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually have my first bachelor's degree in recreational therapy, and I got that because I realized the power of connection as a form of healing. And now I'm actually in school studying psychology, but I have an amazing mentor in Dallas, and my journey with MST and PTSD in general, isn't something I really talked about a whole lot before I met Dallas. And now I'm in a position where I'm actually willing to open up a lot more to other people because my story is a way for me to help other people realize that they're not alone and that if I can get to where I am, after everything I've been through, they can do it too.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that. And, and Dallas, these are things that you kind of walk out a little bit, and everybody's going to be a little bit different. But
yeah.
I imagine that training for something like this is going to be is a big part of your organization. Why don't you launch into what it is you guys do? The Not-So-Average yeah. Jane Retreat, the Outpost, monthly gatherings there. And you also have scholarships for people because yeah. you just want them to get engaged here.
Yeah, so we have three primary programs. The retreat is a multi-day immersive wellness program. I don't want it to be confused with, we're going on vacation and sitting on the beach. It is absolutely not. It's a lot of work. We focus on four primary healing modalities. That's equine therapy, art therapy, songwriting, and resonance repatterning. And it's jam-filled packed, and it is meant to make the most impact in the shortest amount of time while also building a community. And that is our second one will be happening this June at the Bar Z Ranch just outside of Yellowstone National Park. Applications will be opening up actually tomorrow for that. And it's a month-long process of accepting applications and then selecting them based on a scoring system that Rocky Vista University has helped us with. In conjunction with that retreat, we did partner with Rocky Vista University, and we have a medical board-approved research program that is also hand-in-hand with that retreat. So we have been collecting HRV data and
wow.
sleep data and other surveys based on how the veteran is feeling pre- and post-retreat and each session, and that project is being presented at a national level at some conferences with the university. So it's amazing to not only, have the testimony of the women who've been through their retreat and talk about the impact that it's had, but it's an added benefit that we actually have data, hardcore data that backs it up. So that's our flagship program. That's kind of the whole reason I got involved in all this. I wanted to develop a program for women like me. But through that, I realized that there's this whole other amazing community of female veterans out there, and they need just as much support and community as well. So we launched Outpost to be a more consistent community gathering. But at each one of those outposts that happen monthly is an introduction to a healing modality. So, for example, we might do breath work, we might do yoga, equine therapy. And again, it's all about that exposure. Each month is different. You get to gather with the community and have that support, but each month you get exposed to something new. And it might be something that you continue with because now you have a resource, a direct resource that you know supports you, and you can continue that. Or you may understand that, you know what, that's not something that I want to pursue, but at least you know it exists. And then our third program is called Cadence. It's a one-day workshop, and we are launching those brand new this year. And so it's kind of a middle ground between that retreat and wellness program and our monthly gatherings. Our first one will be happening here in Billings, March 14th. We haven't released all the things for that just yet, but that'll be happening soon. And again, it'll be a one-day wellness program for female veterans, free of charge to them.
It's a women-centered approach to post-military service, Operation Juliet. That's today. Dallas Knight is with us here from the Billings area. Aaron Alexander, the Bozeman area expansion to there. We'll talk about that here in the lightning round. We only have just a few more minutes. I want to mention tomorrow, we're hearing more about this. More than 500 people have been reported dead amid unrest in Iran. Heating up over there as well. And then what's going on with Venezuela? What's the authority behind these seizures? Middle Eastern expert and international expert Miradot Kia from the University of Montana will join us tomorrow. That'll be a fascinating discussion. I just feel like we still have so much to cover here, but we've covered an awful lot of it. Dallas, let's go into, you know, again, what Operation Juliet is accomplishing here. You're expanding into the Bozeman area, which is a good sign, but also there's a lot of training. There's a lot of probably little pieces that have to fall into place there. Talk about this process and what's going to be the end result.
Yeah, I mean, we've been in Billings for the last 14 months, and it's been a great success. And we have returning women every month, and we have on average two new women that join us every month. And we're just going to rinse and repeat. We're not trying to reinvent our own wheel. So we just want to be able to provide this to the Bozeman area. And our first event is this Saturday, January 17th at 11 a.m. And we're going to be talking about nutrition because that's all where it started with me. So that'll be your first outpost. You'll be able to meet other female veterans that live in your community. You can count on them to be a part of your community from here on out. And then you're also going to get a little education when it comes to nutrition specifically for women. And with that, you're going to get your choice of a free vitamin D or B12 shot. So come on over. That's on us. And I know it conflicts with the Bobcat parade at 10. So just, you know, go watch the Bobcats march down Main Street and then come over to Ivy Element and join us for about an hour or two. Lunch is also going to be provided.
Nice. Lisa in Miles City called, wanted to encourage you two, Dallas and Aaron. Aaron, be encouraged. What are you encouraged about here? We just got like about 30 seconds here.
You know, I'm super encouraged to continue to connect with female veterans here in the Valley. We've done a little bit of research, and it looks like there's approximately 500 female veterans here in Gallatin County, and we want to be able to connect and become a community with as many of them as we can.
And celebrate them. We want to celebrate
them. Amen to that, right?
Yeah.
That's the ultimate goal of healing, I think, is yes. that joy returns. And
yes.
Yeah. Dallas Knight, Aaron Alexander, thank you guys so much for what you do. Thank you for your service and for what happens after.
Thank you for your support. We appreciate it so much.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.